outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors,
beat on a book on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. Inside Outdoors with Don Jordan, Buddy Bill, and Rich Reardon gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors, hunting, fishing, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues, and just down-home family fun. Inside Outdoors is an enjoyable and informative way to learn about what nature has to offer and how to be a good steward. You can find us at InsideOutdoorsRadio.com, and we invite you to write in about your fish stories, outdoor stories, favorite places, questions, or just about anything you want us to talk about on the show. So sit back with Buddy Bill, Don, and Rich for another episode of Inside Outdoors.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you by Morrison's Appliance.
That's right, Morrison's Appliances and Service on West Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington, Indiana. Serving Monroe County since 1954 with eco-friendly service, pickup, and delivery at 900 West Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington. For more info, visit Morrison's Appliances and Service.com.
Hey, good morning, everybody. By golly, on a little wet morning, this is Inside Outdoors with old Buddy Bill here.
And I'm Rich Reardon.
And old Rich, and then Don, you said sent him on assignment.
Yeah, he's still down there toughing it out in Florida.
Well, he's enjoying it down there. I'm sure he'll call in here after a while and tell us all about the fishing and the weather and all that good stuff. So we'll just kind of wait on him. Boys, there's just not much going on here in the county or around the state, really. The hunting seasons are about all gone. Well, they're over with for this season.
Yeah.
And fishing's not been that good. Of course, it had a little ice fishing, and it turned out to be pretty good for the ones that went. There wasn't a whole lot of ice fishing going on, but there was a little, and they were catching some pretty nice fish.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, there's not a lot of activity in the woods or outdoors, other than unless you want to take a little hike through the woods and see what birds are out. Have you seen any humiliating birds this year?
I've seen no humiliators.
Well, you know, I miss them, boy. They're a beautiful bird.
Mm-hmm.
They are a beautiful
bird. And we are talking about the humiliating woodpecker.
Yeah.
Correctly.
That's right.
As we call it here, which is the, you know, those are the big ones. They're big.
Great big.
Yeah, they're very big.
Huge.
Yeah.
They'll eat your windowsills right out if you've got wooden windowsills.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when they peck on the door, you'll think somebody's out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember I've seen a few. I used to live out close to the the state forest boundary, and there was a few of them out there that used to show up at my house all the time.
Well, there used to be some come around our house, but, you know, I haven't seen any recently. And I don't know. I'm sure they're still around, but.
So you think that's where humiliating came from, when they knocked on your door and you went to the door and looked out and said, there's nobody here?
Yeah, well, I don't know. That's just kind of something that I...
Maybe that's connected to the Hoosier thing, you know, like when they say, who's there?
Who's there? Yeah, who's there? Who's there? Yeah. Well, could be. I mean, you know, they're humiliating. It's... they peck on your doors. They'll peck on your windowsills.
Right.
Even at that, they are a beautiful bird.
Yeah, they are.
I think
amazing bird.
And
of course, we're talking about the pileated woodpecker, just for those who didn't get it yet. But
Yeah.
Well, maybe they're out today. Today, it's mostly cloudy. And at this morning, I'm proud to say and happy to say it's 53 degrees.
A little different than it was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, last week it was about what?
It wasn't bad last week.
It wasn't too bad, but it was still not 50. It was maybe 30-something.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Right.
We're going to have to take a break, I think.
Well, a quick one. When we first get started here, I want to tell everybody where we're at and what we're doing. And but you know what? I am joining this weather because...
Well, enjoy it this week.
Well, no, I didn't want to start. We'll wait till after the break till we start breaking the bad news.
Yeah, we'll forecast a little more bad news. Not intentionally, but...
We got nothing to do with it. We're just
nope. Well, it's not our doings.
You know, sitting back and trying to deal with it. So
that's right. That's exactly right.
But anyway,
so folks, don't go away. Get you a big old ham and egg sandwich, a big plate of biscuits and gravy, and by gum, we'll be right back in just a short.
Hey, this is WFHB here, Bloomington, Indiana, broadcasting independently from the John Waldner Arts Center, is owned and operated by Ivy Tech Community College in Bloomington, and they're a proud supporter of community radio. We will be back in just a minute with more Inside Outdoors, and I think we got Don calling in from Florida, so hang in there, Don, and we'll be to you in just a minute. You're listening to Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don Jordan, and Rich Reardon.
Don will be up.
Hey, welcome back, folks. We was talking about the weather when we took that little break there, and if you remember a week or so ago, I have mentioned it several times that anytime you have fog in January, the old saying is it'll freeze a February dog. Well, you know, that pretty well holds true. A lot of the old signs and the old sayings anymore, I know, don't work. This global warming and all has changed things considerably, but I think that you can kind of depend on this fog freezing a February dog. Now, we got some snow coming in, they say, but they won't tell us how much.
Well, and also we got Don Jordan. Don, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Hey, there you are.
How you doing, Don? This is Don Jordan, Inside Outdoors, and he's the one that came up with that name. It's copywritten, and it's a trademark for Don Jordan, and you can go to his website at Inside Outdoors.
Actually, that's the Facebook page is Inside Outdoors, but the website is... Don Jordan Outdoors.
Don Jordan Outdoors. So there you go. Go check us out. And welcome, Don. Thanks for calling in. We're just talking about the weather now.
Yeah, well, for good reason. I can see you got a little snow coming in up there, and we got a little rain coming in here. So.
Well, it's raining here this morning. It just started early this morning. But
I think, yeah. We're going to get that after it passes you by.
Is that, you're going to get our leftovers?
Yes, we almost always do.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's, let me see, it's 64 degrees and sunny South Florida today.
Well, you're not beating us by much, maybe 10 degrees.
Yes, well, as I saw, it was 75 here yesterday for the high, and it was 55 up there, or 58 maybe. And that's the January thaw, I'd say, wouldn't you, Bill?
Well, it is for a while, but thing of it is, we're not going to enjoy this long.
Well. It can't last too much longer, and we got the groundhog thing coming up. You know, I mean, it's going to be March, and before you know it.
Well, it will. This is the end of January, and it's really went pretty fast, and we've had some cold weather, below zero and stuff, but still, yeah, it's went pretty quick, and February is not normally that bad of a month. But it can be, of course. But
as we've talked about before, Bloomington is usually much milder than the rest of the states that we hear on TV all the time.
Right,
north of us, the cities north of us, this has really been unusual. You know, 12 below. We had a stretch there where it was below zero for 3 or 4 days in a row, which is really unusual for blooming.
It is anymore, yeah. It used to be it wasn't, but anymore it is. And
Yeah.
Well, it seems like we always get a couple weeks in the winter that's real bad, and a couple weeks in the summer when it's so hot, you don't want to do anything either.
Well, those are both good times to stay indoors.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Now, Rich was giving us a little weather report here a while ago and said that, and I have seen it in the past where we have had a lot of snow in February, and he was telling about it would snow a day or two and then clear up and then snow some more and then clear up, and I have seen that in the past.
Just as long as it melts in between there.
Well, it don't melt much in
between. I don't
think
it's going to do it this time, no. According to the NOAA and some others, they're saying it's going to be early February. And they're not really talking too much, but I saw this whole thing about the Ohio Valley is going to be pretty much in trouble. And Kentucky is supposed to get a lot. And
Good. That's good. We like that.
Yeah. And then all the way up into West Virginia and the whole deal. And we're looking at probably 2, 3, 4 inches a day for a little while in about a week or so. And that's what they're saying could possibly happen. But I
don't see that happening.
I don't know. We'll just have to see.
Well, it's possible because, like I said, I've seen it before.
They're almost always alarmist on this snow business. Every once in a while they get it right, but almost always they send everybody in town out to Walmart to buy all their bottled water and get ready for the coming disaster.
Well, we were just talking about the old wives' tales or whatever you want to call them. And Bill, why don't you bring that up again about the dog and the...
Well, anytime, and it's always worked in the past. If we have any fog in January, which we've had a lot of foggy mornings in January this year, it'll freeze a February dog is what they say, and that means that it's going to get cold and not necessarily a lot of snow, but the way they're predicting right now, we're going to have a lot of snow in February.
It says a lot of snow all through February.
So. Yeah, and I think... one of the reports that come in yesterday from Kentucky was 14 inches supposed to hit down there this Thursday. So we're going to have to wait and see if this comes out. Now, remember, we've talked about the January fog and the February dog. And now, if it thunders and lightnings in February, write that date down on your calendar. Because in May, it will frost.
Hmm.
Now, that won't necessarily come completely true, but say it's the 2nd of February and it thunders and lightnings. The 2nd of May, or thereabouts within a day or two, if it doesn't frost, it'll get almost cold enough too. Now, I have seen it get to where, it would almost be cold enough, but it wouldn't actually frost. But now in low lands, it might do it. I mean, I'm taking up here on the hill, and where we're living, and it's a little different, down in the bottoms and stuff, it could frost.
Yes, it always frosts. It's always colder down low.
Right.
You have to do that creek bottom in the summer on your motorcycle. You always notice that.
Anyway, you want to kind of keep that in mind.
I remember the salted dog, froggy dog last year. You made this, you pointed this prediction out. And of course, I believe it did come true that it was going to be cold and sometime in February, and I'm sure it was last year, was it not?
It was.
So now I'd say that this May, fall in the category of it's always going to have a cold spell in February, maybe, but you're not always going to have a fog in January, right?
Right.
Is that the deal?
Right.
We had fog down here, too, in January. And I do wonder what that means for us.
You'll have some cold weather in February.
Cold weather in February.
Yes. Well, it won't be. It probably won't get down to freezing, you know, like it does here, but... You'll have some cold days, and of course, anytime it gets 40 degrees or 50 down there, it's cold.
Well,
it is to me.
I've had the heat on here.
I bet.
And because it's been in the 50s, pretty regular, like 53, 54 in the morning.
Uh huh.
It just feels colder in Florida for some reason when it's like that.
Well. It's just you're used to it being not being cold,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got the ocean breeze and stuff coming in, and that makes a difference.
On the other hand,
a lot of dampness.
Yeah, a lot of people who live here and have lived here for a while look forward to this weather more than anything else all year long because it's so beat you down hot all summer long.
Oh yeah.
So it's just, if you like hot weather, this is the place to be in the summertime.
Oh, my, yes, it is hot.
The really welcome I always did, too, when I lived here all the time. About November when those temps start going down in the 70s, that's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that. You know, like to see that.
Well, you know, back to forecasting the weather in the past, there were at least two, three, four other ways that we figured that out. And so I'm going to ask you, Bill, how was the persimmons doing this year?
Well, remember they had the knives in them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was for cold weather.
Yeah.
Well, that certainly came true, didn't it?
That did pan out, and we're not over. I mean, February can be one way or the other, and I've seen it mild in February, and everybody else, you know, of our age, naturally, has seen it. And I have seen it Valentine's Day in 1950. I'm trying to think here. 53 or 4?
Mm-hmm.
It was there at the house. It was 29 below zero.
Oh, man.
Clear Creek was 32 below zero,
uh-huh.
And that was on Valentine's Day in 1953 or 4. I can't remember which day of year it was. But
Well, that is a good excuse to keep your honey warm that day.
That was back when I was in high school, son.
Well, you didn't have a honey.
I didn't have a honey.
Hey,
we're going to take a quick break here just so we can kind of hold on to our seats and get some coffee, and we'll be right back in just a minute. What do you say, Bill?
Hey, don't go away. Get you another big old plate of biscuits and gravy. A double order this time, and we can bring us some down here, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
Hey, and you're listening to WFHB Bloomington at 91.3 FM. And that's in Bloomington, 91.3. And then 98.1 is what I'm thinking about next, and that's in Nashville. 100.7, and then we've also got Ellettsville at 106.3. So community radio for South Central Indiana is right here. Right now it is mostly cloudy at 53 degrees, and it's going to be a little bit warmer and today, and I think we got about a high of 49. Patchy fog, showers all day. It's raining right now, but boy, it's better than 10 below zero, so enjoy it. We'll be back with more Inside Outdoors shortly, right now, very shortly. You're listening to Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don Jordan, and Rich Reardon.
Hey, welcome back, folks. By golly, Don's down in Florida on assignment, and I'm Buddy Bill.
Here I am.
And Joe, Rich is sitting over here running controls and trying to keep up with us. And,
yeah.
We're just moving right along this morning.
Well, you were talking. I had to cut you off there, but we were talking about the persimmons.
Yeah.
And just for those who haven't listened to our show for the last 16 years, hey, what is the persimmon? Tell us about how that works.
Well, you mean what is a persimmon? Well, of course, it grows on a tree.
Some people might even know what a persimmon is.
Well, they're in southern Indiana, and they grow on a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that a persimmon tree?
That's a persimmon tree, and that's what they call that little rascal.
Yeah,
and it's just kind of like a peach tree or apple tree.
Mm-hmm.
Comparable, only the persimmons are not near that big.
Boy, they make some good pudding, though.
Oh, persimmon pudding. Yes, they do.
Hey, Bill, aren't you supposed to eat those when they're green?
It's best not. If you want to pucker up and kiss your girlfriend, yes. But don't be picking them off the tree. You have to pick them off the ground.
Okay.
If you pick them off the tree, you will get a little green, and it will pucker you up.
All right.
Yeah, once you've done it, you probably won't ever try it again.
Yeah, you do it once, you won't do it the second time.
Yeah. We had some blackberries yesterday that did the same to us. Boy, no wonder they were on sale.
They were just a little bit on the bitter side.
They were bitter. That's the only way you could describe it. But anyway, back to the weather. So what do you do with a persimmon, wouldn't you?
Well, you put it through a colander and squeeze all the good pulp out of it and take two cups and put in a baggie and freeze it. And then in the wintertime, you pull that out and thaw it out and make you a persimmon pudding.
Ooh. Yeah
that's
I've
what
had that
do.
Before. It was good.
Yeah, that's what you do with them.
Mm-hmm.
So do you prefer the cake-like persimmon pudding or the pudding-like persimmon pudding?
The cake pudding.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the kind that your wife makes.
Yeah,
Clarice.
Clarice makes them all the time through the winter time, and may once in a while through the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But they're good, and there's several persimmons in this area, trees and mm-hmm. stuff.
Well, we were talking about this, Bill. You remember about all the persimmons trees that have come down along, out towards your way, going down towards Lake Monroe.
Uh-huh. The wind's got a lot of them. Disease has got some of them.
Yours is doing all right, though.
Mine, well, the wind, that one wind we had last spring, kind of took half of one of my trees out. My good one, or what I call my good one, it's an early persimmon, and then there's a late one. And this was the early one. I'd got hit at down by the, years ago, down by the old Todd School down at Lake Monroe, down on Todd Ridge over there, where the old school used to be. I pulled a sprout up one time when it was deer hunting over there and brought it home, and that's one I've still got.
Okay, is that a late one or an early one?
Early one.
Now, does it matter late or early to talk about the weather? No,
it doesn't
explain that for the folks.
It doesn't make any difference. Persimmon seed is a persimmon seed, where it's on a late tree or early tree. And they will all have the same, whether it's a spoon, fork, or a knife.
Now, what do you mean by a spoon, fork,
well,
or knife?
Well, if you split one open and it's got a spoon, we're going to have a lot of snow.
Okay.
If you split it open like this year and it's a knife, it's going to be cold weather.
Okay.
And if you split it open and there's a fork in there, that's going to be a mild winter. Just lay back on the beach and enjoy it.
Hmm. Well, you know, as many years as we've talked about this, it's been pretty darn close.
Yes, it does come. It hits it awful close. And like I say, this global warming and stuff, whether that's got anything to do with it, I don't know. but I'm kind of we're all environmentalists in a sense, and we all believe in clean air and clean water, and looks like we're fighting a losing battle, but we got to keep fighting.
Yeah.
Well, hey, about that. We wouldn't know if we're fighting a losing battle or not, because the media these days does not cover environmental stories. There hasn't been one. They finally got the pipeline one on there after the leak, but it was never on national news except a brief mention saying, oh, the Keystone Pipeline has sprung a leak, you know.
And that's all you heard.
How would we know what's going on out there? Because nobody ever tells us. And a lot of these things are kept secret from us by the government itself, by
True.
The state and federal governments. It's just outrageous.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're 100% right. We just don't hear about it, and they keep it quiet. And just like the pipeline, how many gallon did it end up leaking out?
Well, they initially made an estimate of like 200,000, and it ended up being almost 1 million gallons.
Okay. But see, very few people knows that, and I didn't even know it, and I tried to watch the news once in a while.
It wasn't on the news. You had to tune in to, on the internet, one of the Indian or Native American pages to see what happened there.
And how much ground and how much water did it
There you go. We don't know. And they won't know about the groundwater contamination until somebody tests it or until gas starts coming out of somebody's water pipe, you know?
I think that was pretty close to the Missouri River, wasn't it? I think that went in the river.
I'm not really sure.
Well, there again, see, we didn't get no information, so how would we know?
I was thinking it was actually a different spot than where the protests were, you know, for that pipe, the big protests a couple years
ago. Yeah, it goes across the entire reservation. It wasn't right at the river, but it broke, you know, like they said it wouldn't.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's it.
That happens all the time, all these pipelines.
Hundreds of those taking place around the country every year, and they never get reported, never.
So how come it's called fake news if you actually report the right news, and then, you know, if you don't say anything, that's supposedly the true way of doing it nowadays?
Well, obviously, they want us to see that any kind of environmental story is not news at all. That's just something that happened in the normal course of business, period.
Yeah.
You know, I've mentioned, I made a comment today somewhere that no news reporters that I know of go around regularly to the utilities department and check to see what kind of stuff the industries in our town or any other town are pumping into our sewage system. You know, they were supposed to really tighten that up after the PCB thing back in those years, but I have a feeling that it's not tightened up at all, and we never hear a word about it. A story about what kinds of stuff are coming out of our industries would be pretty eye-opening, I think. Why don't they look at it?
Well, aren't they supposed to fill out some forms and explain to everyone what they're doing?
Well, when they get their permit to hook onto the sewer system, the new guys will have limits put on the certain chemicals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, whatever they have, and that those chemicals are listed then, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, what happens to it after that? Well, reports are supposedly made. The city supposedly tests it, but nobody ever checks to see what the city's finding out. We just assume that, well, if they find something bad, they'll tell us about it. Well, we know from past history that's not the way it works. Somebody has to be checking on them, or we have a disaster. And, boy, nobody's been checking on them now for quite a number of years, actually. So da-da. Let's hope we're not sitting on top of another disaster.
Well, you know, as much as I don't like Disgrace Book, once in a while you'll hear something from somebody that's just witnessing it. And did you see that thing from the guy in Pennsylvania? The creek that they, you know, that was in the town started having foam, and it was just like snow. It was just everywhere. And they, you know, they traced it back to a company up the river, you know, and, we're going to look into it. But, you know, it was just basically foam coming down the, you know, the creek. And you just wonder what the heck that is. You know, it can't be good. It's not just soap.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
There's also natural, you know, this is how they get around this stuff. There is also natural foam created in a fast running stream, especially, or a place where there's some current.
Right.
Where there's a blockade or a sweeper sticking out in the water, you know, you'll see foam build up behind those or at dams. And that's just a natural kind of foam. But, you know, how can you tell the difference? Well, somebody has to go out there and test it, and I don't know whether that's happening.
Well, I think when it fills up the fields that are next to the creek and starts blowing in the wind, then it's probably a little worse than the natural foam state.
Lucy's washing machine episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when it comes down in sheets, you know it's not natural foam.
Right, I didn't realize that was the quantity of foam you were talking about there.
Yeah, it was bad. But you should know, Don, because why don't you tell the folks about a couple things you reported on in the past here in Bloomington?
Oh, well... the PCB story was, of course, the reason I left Bloomington. Actually, I became I guess I turned into a college professor after I was a reporter and was left a newspaper, basically over that. But that's what I was doing. I checked the utilities department, what was going on there, and found out that Westinghouse was discharging PCBs into the environment through landfills and into the city sewage system, which got spread all over the county in the form of sewage sludge as fertilizers on people's farms. And that's how that all came to light, actually. Local guy named Ron Nerig had put it on his field, and it showed up in his milk cow. And they had a little baby girl who's now a grown-up, nice-looking young woman. Actually, she's not that young. I'm sorry. Sorry. Yeah. But anyway, she's a grown-up young woman who lives in New York City.
All women are young. Haven't you figured that out yet, Don?
She was a featured picture in National Geographic in a story that Jim Tom wrote about this part of Indiana back in the 70s. So, you know, that story had many tentacles reaching out into this community and in all the counties around it. So I don't know what else to say about it. I could go on and on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if people don't know what PCBs are. They're pretty bad, and they cause a lot of cancer. And I believe, even though it wasn't reported very highly, that there were a lot of cancer deaths, you know, in Monroe County over that, although... You know, you can tell me better than I can tell you, but was there any data about that, like what it caused as far as health problems?
There was some follow-up studies, and they did find some elevated risk of cancers in employees, especially employees that worked closely around the vacuum furnaces. And there was some increase, and probably it took place so late that they couldn't really so much later, you know, after the PCBs were gone and these people weren't around them anymore, they couldn't get good blood levels, and that's how you associate the disease with the amount of it in your blood. So if you wait several years before you test your blood, well, you know, you can't make the correlation so well. So the data about that is not that great, frankly.
Yeah.
But let me say that PCBs, you know, that sounds innocuous, but they actually turned up in their pesticide monitoring program at the Indiana State Board of Health. And so pesticide, that they are a form, you know, they're a kind of pesticide, actually, and with the same chemical makeup as a pesticide. And if you look at it that way, instead of just saying PCB, well, it maybe means something a little different to you.
And PCBs, as I remember, were in those little glass, you know, and electric lines and stuff. What am I thinking of? The
No.
It was in the transformer.
In the transformer.
Yeah, the big capacitors and transformers. Those things are full of PCBs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In the case of the ones on the telephone pole, they have paper inside them wrapped real tightly and then saturated inside those vacuum ovens that were down at Westinghouse to get as much PCB there as possible because it kept the water out. Water and PCBs didn't mix, and it was a good electrical conductor,
mm-hmm.
so it kept the capacitors from shorting out. They use a fluid similar to that today that's probably just as bad, but I don't want to get into that.
But they did change from PCBs eventually, right?
After they ran out of it, after they stopped using all they had of it on hand, that's what Westinghouse did.
Hmm.
That lasted in well into the 80s, maybe the 80s. Maybe I think they were still using it in 1980.
Hmm.
And, of course, the Toxic Substances Act was in 1976. And this all happened around that time. You know, the PCB story here in Bloomington, the one in the Hudson River in New York with General Electric. And there were just bad actors popping up all over at the time because the EPA had the was empowered and had the boldness and the willingness to go out and enforce the law. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So that's anyway. That's a part of blame. That's out there on Curry Pike, across from the GE building that we're fixing up for Cook Industries.
Mm-hmm.
The abandoned site is right there in that. That concrete place where they test their motorcycles, teach people how to ride their motorcycles,
That's
where they buried the worst of it. Well, maybe not the worst of it, but the big parts of it, you know, the big chunks of concrete that were on the floor of the building and things like that. Those are then were capped. They may have put a plastic over it first, and then it's capped with the concrete, and that's what you learn to ride your motorcycle on today.
Well, a little bit of plastic and asphalt probably protect us forever, right?
Well, they're banking on it.
Uh-huh. Hey, well, we got to take a little quick break here again, and we'll try to get a little more positive subject coming back here.
Well, folks,
hey,
yeah, go ahead, Don.
I just say good positive subject is fishing.
Yeah, there you go. Well, don't go away, folks. By golly, get you a cup of coffee, and we'll be right back in just a short.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, broadcasting independently from John Waldron Arts Center, which is owned and operated by Ivy Tech Community College, Bloomington, proud supporter of community radio. And we're real glad that they are a supporter of community radio, because here we are doing this, and you're listening to WFHB 91.3 FM in Bloomington, 98.1 Nashville, 100.7 FM, and Ellettsville at 106.3. Community radio for South Central Indiana. You're listening to Inside Outdoors, and we'll be back very shortly with some more interesting stuff from Don Jordan, Buddy Bill, and Rich. You're listening to Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill, Don Jordan, and Rich Reardon.
Hey, welcome back, folks, and we're going to get off of the PCBs and start talking about fishing. How's fishing down there, Don? Have you been yet?
No, I haven't been yet. It's just too cold for me. But there has been activity. The best activity, of course, is like 20 miles offshore, and there's been high winds, and the wind was out of the east yesterday, so you could go out about 5 miles before you hit the 5 and 6 foot waves, you know. I don't want any part of those.
I don't either. I've been in them before, and I don't want nothing to do with them.
But there's plenty of freshwater fishing going on right now. The crappies are starting, and so are the, it'll probably be a little while yet for the red ears, but they're usually not too far behind the crappies. And there's a lot of crappie fishing going on over around Lake Okeechobee.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, and I've been seeing pictures on my Facebook, on Inside Outdoors Facebook page. A lot of pictures of people catching both crappies and bluegills with color to them, meaning they're coming up in shallower water out of places like Texas, you know, in parts of the South. So, with that's going on, you know, good fishing is not far behind. And if you're one of those kind of guys that likes to catch those big crappies, this is probably the time of year to go looking down in Alabama and Mississippi and those states where, you know, a lot of people don't go.
Right, right.
And they have big crappies down there.
Yeah, they do. Of course, they get to feed all year round due to the fact the water don't get that cold and don't freeze. So they continue to grow year round, and they get pretty nice size.
They also have a much bigger forage base, stuff to eat down there, is particularly those little threadfin shad, which we don't really have up here in any kind of abundance. You know, those are a tremendous food item for crappies.
Right.
Everything else too. Right. So this is the time of year to think about doing that. I'd say, you know, if you're tired of being cold, you know, maybe Louisiana, mix it up with a little visit to the Mardi Gras, maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
And then head off into the bayou and catch some crappies.
Mm-hmm, right. Sounds like a good deal.
Right. That's a good thing to do this time of year if you got that spirit of adventure and want to get out of town for a while.
Right, right. You want to get away and enjoy it a little bit, time to do it.
I'd also like to mention again an internet site called Camp Pendium. That's CampPendium, campendium.com, which for free gives you access to every campground everywhere in the country and in Canada, actually. So, and they have them, there's an incredible number of free campgrounds. A lot of them are waterfront or right on the lake. May not have amenities like you'd find in a big RV park, but boy, if you're going fishing, they're just ideal.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it.
Get on Campendium and look around. You'd be amazed that wherever you're going, you'll find free campgrounds.
Well, dog, I didn't know that.
I didn't either until my buddy Ron Nerig, who is the guy that was the father of the girl that was in PCB story. And anyway, he travels around out in New Mexico a lot in Arizona and stays in campgrounds that cost him nothing. He buys a state park pass that's good for, you know, the whole year, and in just a few weeks you get paid for that by paying zero to stay in these campgrounds.
Well, I'll be.
Yeah. What a deal.
Yeah.
There are also campgrounds in nearly every state. It's amazing, really.
Mm.
Little city parks, city campgrounds sometimes right on the water, sometimes on the ocean. It's amazing what you can find out there if you're willing to get away from the big RV campgrounds where generators rule, you know. I've had a generator on these camping outfits, but I've come to not care for them too much myself. They are annoying if you're camping.
Yeah, they, you know, make a lot of noise. Some of them make a lot of noise.
Yes, they do, and there's usually many of them if you're in a big one of those big campgrounds. So, yeah, I'm kind of with my buddy Ron on that. He doesn't like them either. That's the reason he goes to these zero pay ones, because there's usually not too many of them out there. They have no water hookups in the desert. There's no water hookups up in the top of the mountain. So,
well, I'd think I'd rather hear that in my heater running. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that little bit of camping this summer.
Oh, are you going to do some camping this year, Rich?
Definitely am.
Yeah? You have any place in mind?
I don't like to say it out loud because other people will show up there.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, there's a few places I'd like to go.
You had an entourage. It's
kind of like mushroom hunting, you know. If you find a nice place, probably I'll be quiet about it.
Yeah, all right. I'm with you on that.
But I will tell you, there are some great places to camp in Indiana, in southern Indiana especially.
Oh, I know where you're going, but at least I suspect, you know, I have a place you've mentioned in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, there are some nice ones in Indiana. I particularly like the federal campgrounds down at Lake Salina.
Yeah. Yeah, you've talked about that before. That looked really great down there. I might try to go down there this year.
And the woods is loaded with mushrooms there.
Really?
There at the right time, you can find mushrooms right behind the campground.
Hmm.
You know? So I highly recommend that place. That's a real good place. And the fishing's good, too. So,
where's Salina at?
Pardon me?
Way south, down by the Ohio River, right?
Oh, no, it's right about a half a mile south of I-64, where Indiana 37 crosses I-64. You take Indiana 37 all the way down until you cross I-64, go a half mile, look on the right, and there it is, a road going back to...
Well, I'll be darned.
Okay.
Federal recreation area. It's been there for years and years. I remember actually going down there right after they had gotten the property, and there had no development at all. There was zero. And the fishing was very good in Indian Lake and continues to be, as far as I know. It's a very fertile lake. And, boy, it has a nice red ear in it. It has nice crappie in it. It used to have great bluegill, I think. I'm not so sure what happened with them. They got heavily fished down there. So, anyway, it's a good place to go.
Sounds like it. Sounds like a place to just kind of sit back and relax.
Yeah, good. It is a good spot.
Yep.
It's a good spot. And there's other places around, too, you know. There's some free ones down in southern Indiana here and there. And there's some people's campgrounds. You familiar with people's campgrounds?
No.
Well, people's campground is often in a parking area or close to the boat ramp.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. Right. And guys with their camper on the back of their pickup truck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I understand now.
Pull in there. They got their boat, and they'll get it launched and pull it tied off up on the bank. And they're at daylight. They're out on the water, and then they come back, and they got their little thing. They can crash in there for a while, maybe stay the night if they want to fish it again. You know, that's a people's campground.
Yeah, that's that's a nice little campground.
Well, we probably shouldn't talk about that either, because somebody hears us telling about something that people like, and they try to get rid of it.
Well, they
or make money on it anyway.
But gee, you know, that would require every bridge crossing. You know, every place there's a bridge crossing a river, mm-hmm. there's a potential people's campground on both sides.
Yeah.
Usually. And the farther out in the country you get, the more unmolested they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, be adventurous.
Well, hey, you know, we're running out of time, but I do want to bring up another thing I think that has a little bit to do with the outdoors. Mr. POTUS has now put a 30% tariff on solar energy. What do you think about that?
Well, what do you think? I mean, I'm just now getting into solar energy. Got it on my RV to run my TV and, you know, the lights and stuff like that. And it's great, and it's free. Well, I mean, it's not an exact, but the longer you use it, the freer it gets. So, and it's an outrage. Bloomberg Magazine says that it may be so popular that the people will willingly pay the additional tax because they want to put solar in.
Yeah.
And I would probably be one of them because, boy, it really is the miracle that it has been said to be, and it was getting pretty affordable. I hope it remains in the range of the common man.
Well, he's doing all he can to make sure it's not affordable, which I believe probably, you know, who did he make the head of Exxon? He's, what's he doing? He's the secretary of, I forget what he is.
He's the secretary of state.
State, yeah. So
right.
That's...
He's dealing with the Arabs.
He never had anything to do with politics except for dealing with Putin and the big oil deals they were making up there. So apparently that's still in the works. I mean, you hear everything about oil, but nothing about solar anymore.
Well, I don't think it matters. Solar is here. It has momentum. People know that it works, and everybody, it seems like, you know, there's in every neighborhood now, there's somebody tinkering with getting off the grid. And, you know, it isn't that hard. One of my best friend's brother is off the grid up in northern Michigan. It's possible to do. All it takes is the willingness and gather the money to do it. And of course, then you want to get off the grid with water, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, no problem if you're already out in the country. You probably have a well, but keeping that groundwater from, you know, protected will be a big thing in the future because water is going to be a limiting factor for us.
Now, Bill, do you have a well down at your place?
Hey, yes, I do.
And has that been pretty clean all these years?
It has. I haven't tested ever. I haven't for a while. Of course, we don't use it that much anymore. But when I was using it, we had to store and stuff. Of course, I used city water for in the kitchen and stuff, but I used the well water for the minnows and anything outdoors and stuff, and to water plants or trees or whatever. And I had it tested every year, and it tested good. But I tell you, as many houses and the way this ground is around here with sinkholes and stuff, it makes me nervous. I'm afraid eventually, I'm like Don, it's going to be ruined. And but I do keep an eye on it. You keep it tested to make sure that it is 100% safe. But and it's a good well. It's a deep well. But
how deep is it?
140, a little over 140 foot.
That's pretty deep.
So, but anyway, it is good water, and we don't use it that much. And I do use it over at the building for the restroom, one of the restrooms and stuff. But we don't use it a whole lot anymore, but we do still use it.
Do you, when you were growing up, I know you lived there, did you drink that well water growing up?
We didn't have that well water. We had a cistern.
Oh. Yeah, a lot of cisterns around.
We had a cistern, and then later on when I went to farming and milking and stuff, and we had, of course, we didn't have city water or anything then. We had to drill a well, and I was just lucky enough and got a, went out in the field there and found a good vein, and we got a good, pretty good well.
So did you have it witched?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Or doused, I guess they call it.
No, water witching.
Yeah, they say it was witching around here.
The dowser.
Do what?
Who did that?
Mr. Duncan down at Sanders at the time. He's passed away since, but Hayes Duncan.
Hayes Duncan and Sanders. Okay. Well,
I can do it. I can do it myself, but I don't trust myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you got to have experience, right?
I can do the same thing. Not everybody can do it.
Yeah, I've tried it. I don't think I get the basic principle. I don't have my mind's not right for it, you know?
Well, I don't know what it is. They always used to say, and here's another old saying, you know, the old timers, there's one male in each family that can witch water. And of course, that was back when they used to witch for springs and wells and stuff. Of course, there was a lot of hand-dug wells, and then they dug out springs and stuff for cattle water and stuff like that. And they witched it, and of course, there was a lot of witchers around, you might say, water witchers.
And, they had bigger families then, eh?
Yeah, they had big families, and of course, a lot of we're kind of on a dry ridge right there, and that's the reason I think that we've still had the cistern. But I had to go over into the field and find a good vein, and therefore I went ahead and drilled a well and dug it and run water lines and electric lines and everything else to it, and it's paid off over the years.
Hey, well, I hear that music playing, so unfortunately we're going to have to quiet down the subject, but if anybody's a water witcher out there, let us know. Call up WFHB, let us know somehow, and we'll have you on. We'll talk about that a little bit. I think that's an interesting topic. But we're about done for this week, so thanks for calling in, Don.
Yeah, you have a good week there, Don.
Yeah, stay warm up there.
Yeah, we'll try. We're going to do our best. We'll build a fire.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Bon, we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
All right.
Well, folks, we're going to have to get out of here. By golly, we hope you enjoyed this morning's program. By golly, and if you got a question or anything, just call the station here and leave a message or something.
That's all we have time for.
And they'll get it to us, and we'll talk about it. And it's hard to call in because we've only got one line, but maybe you can drop us a line or call in between. So
well, once Don gets back, we'll have the line open. So
yeah, we'll have the line open then. So we're going to have to get out of here, folks. Everybody have a good week. Enjoy this warm weather while we can. And by golly, we'll be back next week with something. Hey, I don't know what, but we'll have something. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
So thanks, everybody, for listening and tuning in this morning. And so we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, you're listening to WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. And we appreciate you listening. This has been Inside Outdoors, and we will be back next week. Thanks for listening. Enjoy that 53 degrees.